Les colloques du Collège de France.
J'invite notre collègue, donc Régine Pondinsky, professeure à l'Université de Freiburg, qui va nous parler de Tigunanum from Zimrilim to Ratusili Ier.
Dear colleagues, dear ladies and gentlemen, I'm very honored to have been invited to this conference, this highly interesting conference by Dominique Chapin and his colleagues, to present a paper on Tigunanum, a place in Upper Mesopotamia that has kept me quite busy for the past few years, quite unexpectedly so, as I had the opportunity to work on unpublished texts coming from that region. During the Old Babylonian period, Tigunanum was referred to as Mat Tigunanim. Texts from Mari, Tel Shemshara, Tel Elan, which deal with the Turukians, suggest that Tigunanum was located somewhere north of Shubat Enlil, beyond the Tur Abdin, on the left bank of the Tigris. It was towards the end of Zimrilim's reign that a king of Tigunanum was mentioned in a list of expenditures signed by Mukanishum. According to this list, a throne made out of precious Musukanum wood was given as a reward to a king named Nakat Mish, king of Tigunanum, as a reward for joining a coalition with Zimrilim against Ashlaka. Another letter by Zimrilim reveals that Tigunanum had already been a vassal of Mari during Yahdunlim's reign. Following Zimrilim's information on Tigunanum, everything ceased, as did also other sources, which is why this period is referred to as the Dark Age. In Upper Mesopotamia, this Dark Age between the Old and Middle Babylonian period started with the end of the archives of Tel el-Rimah and Tel el-Elam during the reign of Samsu-iluna and lasted until the rise of the Mitannian and Kassite kingdoms. And during this Dark Age, another king of Tigunanum emerges, and that is Tuniptesub, who is also known as Tunia, who is addressed in the Labarna letter by a king named Labarna. That's why it has this name. And this text was edited by Mirio Salvini in 1994. Labarna, who is usually identified with Hattusili I, takes us well into the 17th century, for which there is more textual evidence actually coming from Tigunanum, now referred to as Tigunani. It is the first letter that is linked actually to Hattusili I, providing vital contemporary proof of the historicity of elements in Hittite legend and history, in particular to his campaigns. Hattusili's second campaign was directed against the Syrian strongholds, where he destroyed Khashum in the area of Gaziantep, an important ally of Halab, and then he moved on to Khachum and destroyed it as well. All this may be connected also to Tikunani's support of the Hittites, because according to his annals, Hattusili I received a silver chariot as a gift from the king of Tikunaya or Tikuna, but it remains unknown whether Tikunani was a vassal or an independent ally and whether the Hittites ultimately conquered Tikunani as well. Apart from the Labarna letter, which with this essential synchronism, of course, more texts can be related to Tuniptesub, which most likely come from the site itself. Salvini published the Chapiro Prism along with two divinatory texts in the 90s, and more recently another prism called Il Prisma della Città and a number of interesting administrative documents. Andrew George edited another set of important texts coming from Tigunani, including divinatory texts clearly belonging to the Aleppo and the Babylonian tradition, as well as documents and letters which demonstrating strong ties with Assyria. In total, about 450 tablets can be linked to Tigunani based on their content, the language, the prosopography, and for those that have been actually published, their paleography. Most of these texts are only known through the notebooks, or the so-called folios of texts that were collated and transliterated by Wilfred Lambert in the late 80s, early 90s. However, some of the texts have been published in the meantime do not appear in those folios. Of the 445 known texts, only 25 have actually been edited. And the majority of the texts remain unpublished, and they are scattered across various private collections. Unfortunately, the original tablets cannot be collated to ensure a proper publication or reconstruction of their archaeological context, which was never recorded and will thus be forever lost. Nevertheless, the project on the Kingdom of Tikonani, based on unpublished texts in the folios, and which was led by Josué Hustel, has enabled the project team to gain insight into the history, the administration, and the society of Upper Mesopotamia during the 17th century. In 2021, Juan Antonio Belmonte, one of the team members, provided a compelling analysis of the geopolitical context of the Tikonani records. He demonstrated that the heartland of this kingdom, comprising at least 85 towns and settlements, centered around the Tur Abdin. And Belmonte's reconstruction is supported by Il Prisma della Città, which recorded levies or tribute in the form of silver bundles and rings paid by various cities to the king Tunip Teshup. The core of the kingdom must have been situated somewhere along the Upper Tigris within the region of Diyarbakir, Bismil, and Batman, and strong ties with Amasha, probably Amas, with the place Hurra, which is close to Urkesh, and Kawilishtamani, which is probably identical with Old Babylonian Kawila, demonstrate that Tikonani's area of control extended southwards of the Tur Abdin, which provided access to the Khabur region via the Mardin Pass. And thanks to its strategic location, Tikonani controlled most of the older trading routes leading from Ashur to Kanish via Amur Sakum, Eluhut, and Harmensheni, which is the old Babylonian Hirbazanum. Traditionally, the Labarna letter has been understood as a Hittite king informing his servant or vassal Tunip Teshup of a plan to attack Khachum with the assistance of Tikonani soldiers in exchange for a share of the booty. This reading was recently challenged by Freidank and Prechel, according to whom no military action is actually mentioned in the letter. Instead, the Hittite king informed Tunia of his plan, of his kaskel in the sense of Padanu or Laktu, to form a coalition against Khachum by proposing that Tunia enters into a contractual agreement with the Khachean. In fact, recently published documents from Tikonani reflect quite close and peaceful relations between Tikonani, Hatti, and Khachum before Hattusili's campaign against Khachum, and that Tikonani and the Hittites were perhaps contemplating an alliance of convenience with benefits for both sides. For example, this document shown on the right hand, on the left-hand side, which was published by Salvini in 2021, records the transfer of silver from Hatti to Tikonani for onward distribution. The text in the middle reports that a man from Hatti had sent copper as a royal gift to the king of Tikonani, and interestingly, this man from Hatti is named Buli, who may have been the same person as the Hittite king's servant attested in the Labarna letter. Khachum is also mentioned in relation with five women who are understood to have been seized as booty or prisoners after Hattusili's conquest of the city. But as this interpretation relies heavily on scarce and incoherent Hittite sources, this interpretation remains doubtful. According to Tikonani texts, we can see that the kingdom maintained quite friendly relations with Khachum, which was ruled by a king named Musha, who may have been Hattusili's opponent. King Musha of Khachum received textiles and precious metals, and even the queen of Khachaya received gifts from the king of Tikonani. Since the texts from Tikonani do not reveal any hostility between Khachum, Hatti, and Tikonani, the tentative interpretation of Tikuna's gift to Hattusili as a celebration of the success against the common enemy Khachum still needs further evidence. Tikonani was rather threatened by the Kassites, who had presumably reached the Upper Tigris following the Piemont route alongside the Sagros and Taurus ranges. An administrative record refers to the to a Kassite invasion of the land belonging to the city of Tikunani, which is why hundreds or even thousands of bows and arrows were distributed among individuals from various towns of the kingdom. Among the recipients, we can detect soldiers known from the Hapiru Prism. The first recipient is, for instance, Irip Teshup from a place called Indayatsi, which is located in the Habur Triangle close to Nahur, who is followed by an individual named Shakumshe, who is attested again as Shukumshe in the Prism from Shinitsa, and another individual, Zuka, from Achumetze, according to the reading of Salvini, which is most probably misspelled for Armetze, which is frequently attested in the Tikunani texts. In an unpublished letter to the king Tunipteshup, Adirum, a vassal of Tunipteshup from the Apum region, reported that the Kassites have invaded the land of Tikunani, and that they are now coming up to his city Urpan to do battle. Adirum requests that chariots and Habiru troops to be quickly sent to protect Urpan, which is located outside of Tikunani's realm, somewhere to the southwest or south of Telelan. Urpan used to be part of the kingdom of Apum in the eastern Habur Triangle and was now ruled by a king named Kuzi. And in another letter, Adirum, who appears to have been under particular threat, informed his father and lord, Tunipteshup, that he was facing increased pressure coming from the land of the king of Ilanzura, assuring him that I will be the enemy of your enemies and the ally of your allies. In another letter, dealing with merchandise, escaped servants, women under the protection of Ishtar and Belet Apim, Adirum addressed another attested king of Tikunani and possibly also Tunipteshup's successor, who's named Nakadmish, and we will call him Nakadmish II. He addresses him as his brother, which indicates that he was on equal footing with Nakadmish. Following Tikunani and Chachum, the third most frequently cited toponym in the Tikunani texts is Biushnum, which is undoubtedly identical to the old Babylonian Bush-Anum. Located south-southwest of the Turabdin, the town was actively involved in horse trade and ruled by a king named Paiter, who received oxides and cloaks from Tikunani. Once shoes and textiles were delivered to the palace of Biushnum, and the messenger Pesim Rite, who is very likely attested in another document as the king's messenger receiving a cloak and oxide. In a letter published by Andrew George in Kuzas 34, the Assyrian ruler Pilach Shadu, who is still read as Pilach Dagan here, asked Tunipteshup to grant his servant Baal-Shanu safe conduct to the city of Biushnai, which attests to particularly good relations among the players along this trade route, and also the persistence of Assyrian mercantile activity after the end of the old Assyrian archives. Pilach-Shadu, who was a ruler of Asu and is referred to as the brother, as a brother, that is an equal of Tunipteshup, and also, although he does not figure in the Syrian king list, he certainly was a petty potentate like so many others in Upper Mesopotamia at this time. And his letter contains a reference to the crime in the city of Ashur, a punitive measure which is otherwise unattested. It reads, concerning Nimaya, who is my servant who transgressed against the city of Ashur, Nimaya has been handed over to your lands, and he's not the son of the god Ashur. And apart from that, the letter deals with the commercial activities with the Karum Shimala, which is located in the great western bend of the Euphrates, presumably southeast of Chachum. The reverse of the partially preserved text with the siglum WGL 7968, which contains a list of individuals with a reference to the flooding of the harvest of the land, inserts a very brief chronicle that mentions Tunipteshup in connection with perhaps Chachum, it only Kha that is preserved here, and with Pilar Shadu, son of Bazaya from Buruli. Burulum is located in the Upper Tigris region to the northeast of the Khabur Triangle on one of the old Assyrian caravan routes, and while the name of the king of Mardaman, modern-day Bazetki, is lost, this document may still provide crucial chronological evidence. Pilach Shadu, named here with his father Bazaya, was also the sender of a letter to Tuniptesheb, I just mentioned before, and Bazaya was the 52nd king in a part of the Assyrian kingdom, which actually covers this dark age that ultimately started with the death of Shamshi-Adad and the unstable reign of his son Ishmedagan, who is the 40th king in the Assyrian king list. Now, if Pilach Shadu, attested in the Tikkunani text, was indeed also a son of Bazaya of the Assyrian king list, this could provide an important chronological anchor for the period of Assyrian history that actually plunged into this dark age. The total number of years passing between the death of Shamshi-Adad and Bazaya and his sons, that is 145 years, suggests that the middle and also the middle reduced middle chronology may not be as far off as it was postulated about 30 years ago when the new chronology gained momentum. And we would reach a middle chronology dating for Hattusili I around 1631, according to the numbers of the Assyrian king list. And even if the Assyrian king lists, of course, are not fully reliable, it seems that the texts were continuously produced in Assur during this dark age. The Tikkunani texts have attracted further attention regarding their dating conventions, of which I will only briefly touch upon the peculiar use of the Limu system. We have 15 eponyms that are known from the Tikkunani texts. Five of these occur in pairs, which is very unusual. Most of the eponymic years are linked to King Tuniptesheb either by direct reference or indirectly via an individual called Enana, who's in charge of the textile workshop at the palace, or the scribes of the documents, who are listed in the blue column on the right-hand side of the table. Although we cannot establish a relative chronology for the eponyms, they span at least 10 years of Tuniptesheb's reign, and interestingly, the names of the Limu Inaya, Shu-Ishtar, as well as Ashur-Idin are attested in much earlier in the revised eponym list, of which Shu-Ishtar and Ashur-Idin appear in Tikkunani as single eponymates. This may indicate that these and other single eponymates represent the so-called official Limu, probably appointed by the city-state of Assur and closely associated with the traditional system. This eponym system seems to have been supplemented to meet the local needs, as evidenced by the paired eponymates, the local eponyms, I would call them. The local eponyms include Hurrian names, some of which one can also find on the Hapiru prism, such as Echlip Keshiar, Tsea, and Aripurani. And as each of these only occur once in the Hapiru prism, their identification is likely. All three appear in the second position after a Limu with an Akkadian name. A look at the contents of the dated text reveals a clear pattern of distribution. Documents dealing with agriculture and animal husbandry, marked in yellow in the table, generally have two eponyms in the Limu dating, and in contrast, texts dated only with one Limu contain information about finished products such as clothing, oxides, bows and arrows, silver, wool, and various items of equipment that are marked in green in this table. The latter are, of course, closely associated with the palace of Tikkunani and are therefore likely to exhibit the traditional Limu system, dating system. And closely associated with the palace are also the divinatory texts, which Shamash Mushtesher explicitly wrote in the palace of Tuniptesheb, which always display one eponym only. The paired eponyms seem to represent two different entities, the palace and the local or regional administration. And at the same time, it represents also a continuation of the system of the old Assyrian period, when some of the Limu were identified with specific functionaries or even ministers of the city. And the persistence of this Assyrian or traditional eponym system and the Upper Mesopotamian calendar during the late 17th century is likely due to the intensive trade relations that necessitated a standardized and supra-regional system. The information gathered on Tigonani and its environs in Upper Mesopotamia reflects a politically fragmented state of Amorite and Hurrian polities that only merged into the Mitannian hegemony in the late 16th or even early 15th century. Tigonani was a medium-sized Hurrian kingdom controlling the upper Tigris region southwards beyond the Turabin, and it was just one of many principalities in Upper Mesopotamia, because we have more than 20 petty rulers that are attested to have controlled small territories dominated by urban centers. Although they acted largely autonomously, many sought alliances with Tunip Teshub for security or commercial reasons. Tigonani seems not to have been dependent on any larger entity, and the newly acquired information provides us with a quite unique view of the situation on the upper Tigris, attesting to a continuity of political structures with numerous small principalities or city-states with a very strong communal power, represented by the elders, the Shugi and the local Limu, who mediated between the palace and the local collective governance or community leadership. I was able to identify a number of Khabiru, of the Khabiru prism in the text of the folios, and apart from being asked to protect towns in a military context, some of them acted as responsible or witnessing elders who were in close contact with shepherds in the context of animal husbandry in towns of the kingdom of Tigonani, which was, of course, one of the key elements of the pastoral economy and society in this region under palatial control. And the Khabiru are also involved in the offering of animals to Nergal, perhaps to celebrate a victory or mark an alliance. And they also received gifts from Tunip Teshub, possibly as a reward for their loyalty. The Khabiru prism, with reference to the king, the two eponyms, and the Khabiru, some of which can be actually identified with the elders, the eponyms, and perhaps also even with petty rulers, appears to have been a written medium that in a way visualized the governmental and administrative structure of the Tigonani kingdom with a very centralized palace administration. And although the archaeological context of this prism and Il Prisma della Città is unknown, they both name King Tunip Teshub and given also their official character, most probably originate from a palatial context. In terms of their content, namely the Khabiru in the service of the King Tunip Teshub and the towns and villages subject to levies, the prisms may have served as prestige objects of cultural significance to the formation of the Tigonani kingdom's identity, while also, of course, fulfilling their administrative function. Evidence from Tigonani shows that the term Dark Age is no longer appropriate for this period around 1600. Instead, the term transitional period or transition period, as used by Shigeo Yamada, in relation to Assyria between the 17th and 15th centuries is certainly more appropriate, for which Tigonani texts provide an important testimony as a region that was fully integrated in the traditional traditional and interregional networks. I thank you for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.